We'll say it's great to continue the programming, special Hanukkah programming, after wave of our Masiba, which was phenomenal. I hope you all appreciate what we have here, something so amazing and beautiful. And just a word to the wise about these Yimei Yun, it's an opportunity, really. The reason we do this in Yeshiva is that everybody has a chance to build up their ideas, to build up their knowledge about these holidays. So as much as you're getting worksheets, you don't have to take all of them, but some of them you should, you know, the shurim which you relate to and click with you, you know, store them. Teach them over to other people and make a kinyan on them. Eventually, these are the classes you can give to other people, to your families, to your wives, your communities, etc. Okay? With that being said, we're very pleased to kick off today's Yom Yun with the shmooze from David Rossman, who's the director of Yeshiva Eishet Torah, and so much of what shines beautifully and solidly in Eishet Torah is under his able hands. So many of the programs there on top of everything, and he's a truly a great Torah builder in and out of Eishet Torah. He's involved in other institutions, and he helps tens of individuals wherever he is. He's also the author of Torah Connections, how we brought Asher David to bring some of his Sefer Torah Connections in English. We'll sell them next week. That's not from him. He didn't ask me to do this. It's my care about you guys to give you a chance to get a great Sefer. In English, he gave me one for free in the past. So I didn't have an interest like that. I'm not even trying to get a free book. But next week, that's going to be available. And, you know, all that he does, and everybody knows him, knows how much he does. Everything he's done with phenomenal midas, anava, humility, and tremendous avos habrias. And he's also one of my best friends. So with all no further ado, it's a great pleasure and cover for us to have Rav David kick off the Yom Yun.
Good morning, everyone. It's a big schus for me to be here with you this morning. I'm just the Rosh Yeshiva. It's always enjoyable to be able to spend time with people who are sincerely looking to grow and learn. And from what I've heard from the schoolmaker, those are the Talmidim here. I know some of you as well for a long time, and it's 100% true. And everyone here should have a continued bracha in all your growth and in the Torah and in the Vodas Hashem. The Beis Yosef asks a very interesting question. You're going to probably hear about the Beis Yosef's question many times, but this is a different Beis Yosef's question, okay? I'm trying to make it famous. The Beis Yosef asks the following question. We have in Al Anisim, we discuss the Greeks, the Yavanim, versus the Hashmonaim. And we contrast the two different groups. Each one is the exact opposite of the other. For example, we say, Masarta giborim biyad chalashim. The strong people are in the hands of the weak people. The rabin biyad matim. Large amounts, massive Greek army, in the hands of the small ones. Utmeim biyad tohorim, the ones who are impure in the hands that are pure. Rishayim biyad tzadikim, and the evil in the hands of the righteous. Each one, and the exact opposite. Then comes the last one. The last one stands out. Vizedim biyad oskei toratacha. The Zedim, who are these Zedim? The wanton, that's how our school translates it, into the hands of the diligent students of your Torah. Okay, those two have absolutely nothing to do with each other. We would have said if you have people who are learning Torah, it should have been the people who don't learn Torah. Who are these Zaydim? Zayin, Dalet, Yud, Mem. What does that word mean? And why is that a contrast to the people that are learning Torah? And that's the question of the Beis Yosef, the Siman Tafresh, Pei Beis. He asks why it stands out. And he says that the reason is it's based on a pasuk in Tehillim, in Kuf Yates Nun Aleph 119:51. It says Zaydim helitzuni ad ma'od. The Zaydim, again, we don't know what that means, taunted me exceedingly. Mitoraschal lo natisi, but I did not steer away from your Torah. So we see the Zaydim taunted me, but I didn't leave the Torah. And to parallel that, we say in Al-Anisim, the Zaydim in the hands of the Oskei Torah Sacha. Okay, so we have a pasuk that seems to compare the two, but we still don't understand why is one the exact opposite of the other? And what does it really mean? So we see from this pasuk something very interesting, that the word Zayd is comparable to the late, someone who mocks, someone who taunts, helitsuni, from the word late. Okay, we find this in the pasuk in Mishle as well, in Perek Chaf Aleph, pasuk Chaf Dalet. It says, Zayd Yahir Leitz Shemo. That the Zayd, the scoffer, is his name. A Zayd is someone who mocks, who makes fun of someone else. There are two ways of getting someone to stop doing something that you want them to stop doing. Right? You could force them. You could make a decree and say, no learning Torah. That's it. We got to stop it. Or you could start to minimize the importance of that practice. You can make fun of it. You could say, well, that's, anyone could do that, or why would you do something like that? That makes no sense. Why are you sitting in yeshiva and learn Torah? You should go get a job. Why are you wasting your time? Some people might have heard that expression, that statement. But and all of a sudden, that impacts you. Whoa, yeah, why am I here? Now, it's always good to know why you're here, right? But all of a sudden, you lose the chashivas. You lose the importance of what you're doing when people start to belittle it, to make fun of it. So there are two ways of going about getting someone to stop. And we see that the Yevanim had this strategy of being a Zayd, being a Leitz, trying to mock the service of the Jewish people. Okay. Now let's take a step back for a minute and see the historical background of what happened in the miracle of Hanukkah and see how this idea of mocking played a very big role in what the, perhaps even the success, if I dare to say, of the Yevanim. The two primary miracles that we know about in Hanukkah is the lighting of the candles and the victory of the Hashmonaim over the Greeks. But there was a third aspect of Hanukkah, which isn't discussed much, but really is highlighted very much in our practice over the day of Hanukkah. And that is, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Nun Beis that the Greeks walked into the Beis HaMikdash and they defiled the Mizbeach. They defiled the altar. They made it impure. We couldn't use it anymore. Come the Chashmonaim, come the Kohanim, and they reinaugurate the Mizbeach. Now we could use it. It was defiled. Now we could reuse it. So excited. It's great. We could use the Mizbeach again. And for that reason, we have a custom of reciting at the end of davening every day. We don't say, at least here in Yerushalayim, I think most places have this custom, they don't say Hayom Yom Sheni or Hayom Yom Shlishi like we do normally. We say Mizmor Shir Chanukas Abayis LeDavid. We speak about the inauguration of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, because that was something that happened on Hanukkah. We reinaugurated the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash. A second custom that comes about that, Rosh Hashanah Zalman Orbach says, now this we always like having a good excuse for this. Why do we have donuts on Hanukkah? Right, donuts predates the custom to have latkes by a very long time. They didn't know where potatoes were until a few hundred years ago. Right, so they had donuts much long before. There's actually the Rambam's father has a sefer of Minhagim, and in there it talks about having donuts. Doesn't say the flavors of the toppings, but there was an old custom to have these fried items. And Rosh Hashanah Zalman Orbach says, why? Why are we so into this? So he says, because we want to generate an alamichya, that we should have to say an alamichya afterwards. Why is that? Because in all of benching, we never say the words al mizbechecha. We never speak about the fact that there was a mizbech. But in alamichya, we do. So in order for us to commemorate the altar, the incredible episode of reinaugurating the Mizbeach, we want to be able to say Alamichya. And therefore, we go ahead and we try to eat donuts so we could say another Alamichya. Okay. That would, by the way, mean that if you already had one and you didn't say Alamichya, you're not supposed to have two. That's not that we need to still find a leniency for that to eat as many as possible. Okay. But we want to say it al mizbech achol because we want to think about that idea of the mizbech. And in fact, the Marsha says in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis that that is the reason for the name Chanukah. What's its name Chanukah? So the Rishonim say because of Chanu Chafei, they rested on the 25th, relating to the war. But the Marsha says that because there was a Chanukah, there was a reinauguration of the Mizbeach, of the altar, that's the name of the Chag. It's such an important part, this idea of the Mizbeach coming back to us, that we're able to use it as in our service of God, that the name of the Chag is based on that. Unbelievable. It's not spoken about enough, but it's there. The laning, every single day of Chanukah, is all about the Nisiyim. The Chanukah's HaNisiyim, in the times of the Mishkan, inauguration of the Mishkan. Why? Based on this idea, because the Mizbeach was reinaugurated. So we have these four different customs that exist because of this episode in the Gemara and the Avodah Zarah Daf Nun Vav. Nun Beis, sorry. Okay. So it sounds great. They came to defile it, and we reinaugurate it. End of story. But there's another part to the story that's in the Gemara in Sukkah. It's the last page of Masechta Sukkah, and Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis. And this I only actually paid attention to this year for some reason. I've heard this Gemara many times, but I never paid attention to one of the details. And with the background of the Mizbeach and the Yevanim trying to get us and the Hashmonaim taking us over, the Gemara says something fascinating. It tells a story of one of the 24 watches, the Mishmaros that existed in the Beis HaMikdash, that they'd rotate. They'd have groups of Kohanim that would rotate. Everyone would get a week. They'd sit there in the Mizbeach, in the Beis HaMikdash. They would do the service. They'd get to eat from the Korbanos, and they'd rotate. Okay, one of the families, one of the Mishmaros, were called Bilga. And the Mishnah and the Gemara there says that that Mishmar got punished. They got a punishment. The Gemara asks, what did they do wrong? The Gemara says that there was a girl from that, a daughter of one of these Kohanim. Her name was Miriam. Miriam did something wrong. What did she do? First of all, the Gemara says that she intermarried. Okay? That's the part of the story. Okay? She intermarried an officer. And when she would leave the Beis HaMikdash, she would take her leg with her sandal and she would kick the Mizbeach and she would mock it. She would scorn the Mizbeach. And she would say, oh, all you do is devour the meat of the Jewish people and you, I guess referring to Hashem, you never take care of them. Would mock. Okay. So the Gemara asks the following question. One girl did something wrong. The whole Mishmar, the whole group of people, should be punished because of that one girl? And the Gemara tells us something very, very interesting. It's actually a very important idea in raising children. And that is, whatever a child hears, his attitudes all come from his parents. Meaning, the child, Miriam's attitude, bad attitude, towards the Mizbeach, such an important item, such an integral part of the Beis HaMikdash, the fact she was able to scorn it, mock it, where did she get that from? Where did that attitude come from? It came from her family. And therefore, everyone, the whole family, the whole group, was punished for that. And it's fascinating. This is a fascinating thing. The Gemara, and it's clear in Rashi over there, doesn't say that they were punished or she was punished because she intermarried. That isn't the fault of the parents. That isn't the fault of the family. People make choices. But the attitude that she had, that this holy Mizbeach is nothing, that came from the home. Very, very important thing to remember whenever you create your environment in your home, how do you want to generate and create the feelings and the attitudes towards mitzvos. Okay. Now, that was a story way I always heard it. And this year I paid attention to two points in the story. One, who did she intermarry? She intermarried with an officer of the Greek army. That was one. I never paid attention to who it was. Didn't really matter to me. It was from the Greeks. And the second is that Rashi tells us that the entire episode occurred after the story of the Hashmonaim taking over the Yavanim. That whole story happened after the Chashmonaim won. So now, with our history of what we understand, what we spoke about before, that the Yavanim tried to defile the Mizbeach and say, impure. We don't want you using it. There's no, what's this idea of purity? Something beyond the physical, something beyond what we put into a box. Nothing. They mocked it. They were Zaydim. They mocked the Mizbeach. The Chashmonaim took it over. And we said, okay, they won. Now we're back to business. But we see that their Hashkafa, their outlook on life, actually penetrated. And we see that the families that existed started, maybe it's not so important. Maybe the Mizbeach is not so important. Maybe the Avodah, the service in the Beis HaMikdash is not so important. And they started to be less in touch, less sensitive to what's going on, and it filtered into their children. On some level, the Yavanim won in this area. They didn't really care about the Mizbeach or not. They just wanted to make everything a nothing. They wanted to stop it. But they wanted to stop it through scorning and mocking, being a Leitz, being a Zayd, and it worked. And we see that Miriam, a daughter of the Kohanim, what did she do and why were they punished? Because she just kicked the Mizbeach. Who needs it? Unbelievable thing. So we see the importance of being sensitive, and we see what happens when you're desensitized to mitzvos. Now, this is something that exists in our service of Hashem all the time. It's very important in our performing of mitzvos, in our learning of the Torah, in our relationships, in our marriages, for whoever's married, and Mirz Hashem, for whoever is going to become married, the right time. We always need to keep things exciting. Stale is the worst. Recently, we had a meeting of some of the Rebbeim from different yeshivas. And I asked, one of them gave me a ride home, and I asked them, so what's it like, your alumni, in their marriages? I was curious to see, what's the Shalom Bayis like 10 years down the line, 15 years down the road? And he said, okay, you know, they're pretty good, no fighting or anything like that. He said, but a lot of them are stale. There's so much other things going on in their life that they're just not, every day, exciting. Exciting to be married, exciting to give, exciting to be in it with someone else. It just becomes stale, which I'm sure all of us have had those feelings once in a while, right? A Shabbos could become stale, learning could become stale, shaking a loof, things become stale once in a while. That's the worst thing that could happen to a person in their lives. Every single day is supposed to be exciting, it's supposed to be a new day with new opportunities. That's the way it's supposed to be. I know Hanukkah is one of my favorite Yom Tovim, and I love lighting the candles, and part of it I realized is because I spend so much time picking out the menorah and the wicks and which oil am I going to use and buy it for my kids, and I spend so much time shopping that all of a sudden it comes time to the mitzvah and I made it, right? As opposed to if someone's walking to their house 3 seconds before candlelighting time, grab some candles, put it together and you light it. You don't feel it the same, right? When you put in a lot of preparation, you enjoy it much, much more. I remember on the opposite end, I used to always spend a lot of time buying my esrog. So I used to go from one place and look, oh, that's really nice. Okay, like maybe I'll go find a nicer one at another place for a little cheaper, right? So I'd go to the next place and try to get another esrog and say, oh, wait a minute, the first one was better. I'd go back to the first place. The one I wanted was already bought. Then I have to go to a third place and go around and around. All of a sudden came Sukkot and I had my lulav and esrog and it was amazing. This is so exciting. I enjoyed it. And then life got a little more difficult and I had to buy for my children also and I had to buy for my father and others. And then I started going with the direction of pre-orders, where there's a sign up in the shul, and I check off which set that I'd like to go ahead and I buy, and they deliver it to you, and it's already checked by a Rav, and it was much easier. And I still do it partly. But when I realized when I came to Sukkot, I didn't enjoy the lulav and esrog as much, because I didn't spend my time preparing for the mitzvah. The more a person prepares, if you take a few minutes before Shabbos, you sit back, and you say, wow, here it comes. This is what I'm going to try to get out of Shabbos. This is what I'm going to try to learn over Shabbos. This is what I'm trying to do over Shabbos. Your whole Shabbos experience is so much greater. When you walk into your home, Whoever's married understands this. Whoever's not, please take this with you. Before you walk into the house, you stop for a minute. You're excited to get home. You had a long day at work, long day in yeshiva, whatever it was. You just want to get home and lie down, right? But you stop before the door, and you take a minute and you say, okay, I'm now going in. People, my wife, my children, they're going to be excited to see me, or maybe they're going to be very busy. I could walk in there, and I can make a difference in everyone's mood. I could come in happy. I had a long day. I'm exhausted. I could let everyone know that, right? Or I could come in and say, hi, everyone! I could change the whole mood of everyone. If you prepare beforehand, the impact of the next step is so much greater. And that's one of the ways to keep things from becoming stale. There's another way. Another way to stop things from becoming stale. And that is, when it's difficult, you do it a little more. Right? Person could have Seder, and you could come on time to yeshiva, and you could stop at the last minute. Everything could be exactly timed, perfect, do exactly what you're supposed to do. But, it's hard, but you're doing what you have to do. But if you really love something, if you love the Torah, if you love learning, if you love wearing those tefillin, you love wearing those tzitzis, so even if right now I don't have to wear it, or it's the time to take it off, if you just do it for another 2 minutes, another 3 minutes, you extend a little more, it's not easy. It's not easy. But you're able to combat the idea of staleness. And like the Sefer HaChinuch writes, our outward actions very much impact who we are inside. So maybe it's a little difficult, but we do something that's a little different, a little bit more than what's normal. We'll start to feel it inside. We'll start to feel more attached to the mitzvah. We'll feel more excited about it. And that's important, even if it's not natural. Sometimes we need unnatural ways of getting our inside excited. It could be difficult to talk to our wife right now. We're tired. We're not in a good mood. It might be difficult to do a favor for someone. 1 o'clock in the morning, your wife has a craving because she's pregnant and she wants ice cream from who knows where. You're in pajamas already. What, are you crazy? 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm in bed. She really needs it. It's really hard. But you go ahead and you do something that shows that you care. It's not easy. You'll feel so good afterwards. That's part of keeping things exciting, keeping things in a growth-oriented way. You do it when it's not so easy. Oskei Torasecha. We say in the Alei Nisim, it wasn't the people who learned Torah. It was the Zaydim in the hands of the Oskei Torasecha, the people who are busy with the Torah. Like the Prima Gadim writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, he points this out, that it says, Oskei, like we say in Birchas HaTorah in the morning, La'asok b'divrei Torah. We want to be busy with the Torah. What does it mean, busy with the Torah? It doesn't just mean doing what you're supposed to be doing. It means that you have a question in your mind. You're walking down the street, you're thinking about the question. Or you bump into someone, a rabbi or someone else, and you say, you know, I've had this question for a long time, can I ask you? I'm busy with it. What are you busy with? I'm busy with Torah. I'm not just learning Torah. When you're Oskei, when you're busy with something, it shows that you love it. When you just learn it, you also learn secular studies, right? You're not busy with secular studies. You need to know what you have to know, and you have to do well. But here, you're busy with it. When you're Oskei in Torah, that shows that you love it. It's not so easy, the extra 5 minutes. It's not so easy during the vacation to take some time out to learn. It's not so easy when you're lighting Hanukkah candles and there's no Seder, whatever it is. It's not so easy. But when you grab that time, it shows that you love it. And that impacts you. And it makes it alive. It makes it exciting. So the Zaydin were like elates. They mocked the Mizbeach. They mocked the mitzvahs. What do you get from it anyway? Where does it really get? Show me. Show me where, how it connects you to Hashem. Show me. And all of a sudden, you thought you knew the answer. Now you're not so sure you know the answer. And all of a sudden, you become desensitized. We don't feel it. We don't feel that connection anymore to the mitzvahs and to the Torah. That's what the Yevonim were trying to do. And we have to combat that. We have to go ahead and take time beforehand to prepare ourselves for all the mitzvahs. And we have to be Oskei in the Torah. We have to be busy with it, even when it's not so easy. Become busy. That's the exact opposite of the Zaydim. The Zaydim mocked it. Why would you spend extra time? You have vacation now. Why would you spend 5 minutes learning? It's time for breakfast. Take off those tefillin. Why would you do extra? It's not important. The opposite. No, 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 no. We're oskei Torah Secha. We're going to be busy with it because we love it. This is amazing. This is exciting. This is what we're living for. Every day, our relationships, our mitzvos, our learning of Torah is exciting and amazing, and this is what we want. It's the exact opposite, one to the other. I saw, just to close, a beautiful Chassidish pshat. The Gemara says, Masechta Shabbos and Daf Chaf Aleph, until when should you, the candle should be lit? How long should the candle be lit? So it says, Mishetishka Achama, ad until Shetichla Regel Minashuk. Until the people who are walking in the marketplace, they're gone. So they point out that Ashetichla Regel, Regel is like the word Rigilut. Something becomes regular. It's the same thing again and again and again, right? That you should, candles should be lighting. Every day we light another candle, then two candles, and three candles. And Bi'alacha says that the reason is because every day the nis was greater. Wow, it's 2 days. It lasts for 2 days. It's not just the second night of Hanukkah. It's not just the third night. We don't care what night it is. The point is that three nights the oil burnt. Wow. Every day it's better and better and better. It's more exciting. It's more exciting. So the candles have to be lit until the regel, until the regilut, the regularity, the standard, normal, no change, no like that, goes away. Until that's gone. Until we get so excited that every single day of our Hanukkah is alive, allowing us to grow. And Be'ez Hashem will take away from the Hanukkah that message, that we can all walk into for the rest of our lives, always continue growing with a lot of excitement, a lot of bren, a lot of growth closer to Hashem. Thank you.